Okay. Well, good evening, everyone. Colin is on a work trip, and Will is on his way. So they've left me in charge tonight. Do you want to, John, do you want to do a roll call, or do you want to just...
I just thought if people wanted to go around and give their names just for the benefit of Patrick and or anyone listening to make sure that everybody knows who's here.
Okay. Well, it's Andrew Carrick.
Excuse me.
Sorry.
Lorraine Silva.
Rob Cavies.
Pat.
Am I next? Okay. Pat Sheehan.
Okay. And then Catherine, you're on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Yeah, so any changes to the agenda?
I move we accept the agenda.
You get a second? All right. Do we have any public comment? Yes, sir. Did you fill out the, give that to John, please?
Good evening. My name is Kenneth Mitchell. I've probably been to a few of these, so it's nice to see you guys again. I just basically had a question regarding the – I'm sure not the only one who works for the federal government who uses or gets transit benefits and is curious how to – or if it's possible or what's the hang-up in terms of using those transit subsidy benefits to purchase passes. Like I reached out to WMATA. They said I have to contact my transit benefits manager, and then they turned around and told me that according to DDOT, they couldn't come to some sort of agreement between WMATA and why, in terms of using transit subsidy benefits for to purchase passes or other things, as opposed to the current allotment of basically pay per ride. So I was kind of curious in terms of A, what's the hang up, and B, I know like I guess the particular agency I work for, they said they couldn't, but I've heard of other agencies being able to, and those folks, you know, are in the DMV area. So I'm wondering if there's some sort of, I guess, not a uniform, but uniform policy in terms of why some agencies are able to, some aren't. I'm assuming that, you know, all the tax dollars go to, you know, in terms of the budgets for each agency in terms of transit dollars. So there seems to be some hang-up. And I guess the other simple suggestion I had was some way of, or some easier way of informing, you know, WMATA if there's an issue, not like in terms of a public safety issue, like the whole, you know, see it safe, or see something, say something, but simply, you know, if you see either an area that seems like, you know, trash could be picked up somewhere, or a tile's broken somewhere, or a door's ajar, or whatever, you know, stuff that you could, you know, more easily have a channel of alerting WMATA. That's all I had.
Can I just ask you a couple, just kind of a follow-up? Did you reach out to us on Twitter, I think?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's nice to meet you in person. Actually, your question about federal employee benefits was the first one on my list for this evening.
Actually, I did one actually remember. From what I understand, there is a TransServe, used to be a debit card, now it's a credit card. One time it was issued by Capital One, or not Capital One, one time it was issued by, I guess, MetaBank, and then it moved to, I can't remember the other bank, but anyway, now, yeah, Chase, and like, now it's U.S. Bank. And I even called U.S. Bank. I was kind of curious because I was like, you know, I've read it in places where they say it's not, it can't be used on WMATA for some reason. Like literally, some people say if you try to swipe it or try to use it on WMATA, it won't go through versus, you know, if you're a federal employee and you're working in New York or Boston or Seattle or any other city, you could use it on their transit systems. But for some reason, here in the D.C. area, like you can use it on MARC, you can use it on VRE, but you can't use it on WMATA, which basically means since that's the case, you can't purchase a pass using that method. And then they do put money on our cards each month, but it's per dollar, which is great. But at the same time, technically, if I could use have the ability to use that money to purchase a pass, I would actually need $70 in my case less, and I could purchase a pass, and it would fit my commute. Now, it's not going to fit everyone's commute, I know that, but I'm sure there's a lot of people where a pass could be better suited for them, and saving a few dollars along the way for their respective agency.
You're not the first person that I've actually, people who do a bus and rail commute have also brought this to my attention, because, you know, the passes are do provide the unlimited bus, and that's actually one of my priorities to try and figure out what we can do moving forward on the passes, because it's been really great for me doing it through my employer, but for a lot of people, I don't know. I've heard there are improvements coming to the smart benefits system, just the way that people buy things. They would go directly to WMATA and buy exactly what they want, but I don't have any information about that. That's just what I've heard from my smart benefits person at my office. So,
yeah, I read that, like, you know, if I was a contractor, then yeah, obviously it would come out of my own free tax dollars. I would get some sort of, like, debit-type card through either whatever, whoever manages the transit, you know, subsidy benefit. But then, like, but the fact that I'm not, you know, I work directly for, I'm not a contractor, so I work directly for the government. Like, the money is put on directly onto our smart trip card at each month. I don't know. I was just kind of curious because I feel like I'm bugging my transit benefits manager at work, and at the same time, I'm trying to just try to find what the, I guess, issue is.
I'm sorry, Valerie, please.
So I'm one of your fellow federal employees, or state employee, which you are.
Yeah, federal, yeah.
Government employee, yay team. I'm not a specialist in contracting or finances, but I have lived through the one-week training on the Anti-Deficiency Act, and there are a lot of interesting rules in the federal government about how you can and can't spend money.
Yes.
So, and I remember some of the exercises they had in class. They give you, you know, really good examples, and then they tell you why. No, that would be breaking the law. And my guess is that someone in this transit sphere in the government believes that the pass, you can, with federal funds, you can only buy that which you need. So you can only buy the trips that you are supposed to take. You know, I don't know about you, I fill out a form. And
yeah, we did too.
Right. So, and there was even an example of saving a lot of money if you did something a different way. And the response was, it doesn't make a difference if you save money. You have to spend the money for the purpose that it was meant for. So maybe that means that somehow WMATA can say this differently. But that's my guess.
I heard that too, and I've read people say that, like, yeah, they want it so that it's only to and from work. But at the same time, that ignores the question on why is it that if I lived in any other city, I can purchase a pass, which, yeah, you can use to go to and from work. But at the same time, yeah, I guess a side benefit.
I'm not agreeing with you. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I understand. So that's the reason why I was kind of curious, because, like, you know, it seems like that puts folks in this area at a disadvantage to folks who live in other areas. You know, I know, I'm sure you pay taxes too. Like, you know, some of that money I'm sure goes to someone who lives in New York too, just like it goes to your, you know, people around you here. So, yeah, I was kind of curious. I'm like, why is it there's that issue with WMATA versus other transit agencies. And at the same time, it seems like, I don't know, I've heard people say that, yeah, the issue is that, like, the fact that if you don't use all the money, technically it gets clawed back. Basically, if you don't use it, then it gets transferred back to your agency. Now, if you were a private individual and you got money taken out of, you know, your paycheck each month, it gets rolled over. But the thing is, for, I know, a lot of folks, if they were to, like, for me, I'd have to basically not go to work for, like, a week and a half every month for them to, like, equal the amount of savings I would get if I, you know, was able to purchase the pass. Because in my case, it's, like, 126 versus 196. And I don't know about you, but I don't have that kind of leave to be taking off. I don't even earn that much leave a month to even be taking off a week and a half every month anyway. And so, I don't know. So I thought it was interesting. But yeah, I'm sure now that they moved from the Select Pass to the Walmart Pass that there's and the fact they advertise it so much now with all those LCD or HD TVs that they have advertising throughout the metro, I'm sure more and more people will start asking about it, because before I'd asked about the Select Pass and my transit benefits manager, I had no clue what I was talking about in the first place. But in this case, hopefully more and more people at least will be aware of it and maybe bring it up.
So. Valerie.
One other question I have for WMATA, if you guys could check on it. What's the chance that you could buy a pass through the machines? Because I, too, have that credit card, and the government credit card for transit, and if I can use that in the machines and buy a pass, how would they know?
Well, this thing, I literally asked the people who issue it, like, U.S. Bank, I believe it is the current one. And the guy couldn't tell me definitively whether they would or wouldn't. But the problem is, you know how it's kind of difficult if you don't get transit benefit. Well, if you sign up initially, it takes about a month for it to work. And then if something happens, another month for it to get straightened out. And, like, you know, being out of 2 months, which is potentially almost, in my case, you know, $200 worth of commuting, is kind of a risky experiment. But yeah, I've been curious because they couldn't even tell me. And I was wondering whether what I read was old news, meaning maybe that's when it was issued by Metabank, or maybe it was before when it was issued by like Chase Bank. And maybe that's not the case now with U.S. Bank, who I believe issues it currently. But it'd be kind of an expensive process to find out.
So. Well, I really appreciate, and I think I can say we all really appreciate your coming this evening and you know, reminding us of this important issue that, because this all ties back into ridership and getting people to buy the passes makes people ride more, which is, I think we can all agree, is a pretty good thing.
Plus, but also I understand that, like, isn't part of the whole issue with funding for WMATA based on actual ridership, not just to and from work, but if I were to go to and from work and then on lunch I went on WMATA, and then on my way home I went here, and all that kind of thing, in terms of increasing the actual usability, I guess, numbers, because I'm assuming they track all that with the smart chip card in terms of where people go and how many times and all that would affect the funding formula and maybe increase the contribution, I guess, based on the fact that ridership increased.
I'm not entirely familiar with the funding formula and how that's all allocated, but maybe we'll have a second and Matt to bring that up with the appropriate people. But thank you very much again. Please keep on us. Reach out on Twitter if there's anything we can help with.
Thank you.
Thank you. So next on the agenda is the approval of the June minutes. Have you all gotten to see? Were there any changes or questions?
I will say that Catherine has helpfully provided some corrections. They're noted in the printed copies that you have.
No questions or changes? Can I get a motion to approve the June minutes? Can I get a second?
Second.
So approved. The July minutes. Any changes, questions, or additions?
Motion to approve.
Can I get a second?
Second.
So approved. Great. So next on the agenda is, and forgive me if I mispronounce your name, Yetunde. I'm sorry? I'm terribly sorry. Welcome. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Yetunde Olumide. I'm
the Vice President of the Office of Management and Budget Services here at WMATA. Happy to be here this evening. Thank you for inviting me. This evening, I'll discuss Metro's FY21 budget process. September is early in the process, which means we don't have a formal proposal to share tonight. But we can brief you on the broader trends that will influence the proposed budget, which will be released in November. Tonight, I'd like to provide you with an overview of Metro's strategic plan, Metro's capital and operating budgets, and the FY21 budget development schedule. Then I hope we can have a constructive discussion around some questions I have for you, as well as any questions you may have for me. The starting point for the budget is Metro's strategic plan, keeping Metro safe, reliable, and affordable. The key points of which were originally laid out by the general manager in 2017. As of today, six of the principles have been implemented, including approval for dedicated funding for capital investments, increasing capital program delivery to achieve $1.5 billion annually, increasing competitive service contracts to decrease Metro's costs, proposing a budget that limits baseline operating and capital subsidy growth to 3%. The remaining priorities require regional or congressional support, such as reauthorizing PREA federal funding, amending the National Capital Area Interest Arbitration Act, initiating a new retirement plan for new hires, and creating a rainy day fund for unexpected events, such as a federal shutdown and weather-related events. On the capital program, Metro plans to invest more than $1.7 billion in FY20 and upwards of $9.3 billion over the next 6 years to maintain and improve system assets. Metro's capital improvement program includes six categories: rail cars, bus and paratransit vehicles, stations and passenger facilities, track and structures, business support, and rail systems. Stations and passenger facilities is the largest of the six investment categories. In both FY20 and in the six-year program, this includes the major improvements nearing completion for six Blue Line, Yellow Line stations south of National Airport during the summer 2019 platform improvement project. Key customer-facing renovations include new slip-resistant tiles throughout the stations, brighter energy-efficient LED lighting, and illuminated handrails. Additionally, new stainless steel platform shelters will include charging ports and digital map/information displays. More passenger information displays, also known as PIDs, will be installed along the platforms with larger digital screens to improve visibility. The next phases of the platform improvement project will include eight stations in 2020 and six in 2021. Other key improvements within the six-year program include receipts of the remaining 7,000 series cars and advancing the 8,000 series cars, replacement of obsolete bus garages, Metrobus and Metro Access fleet replacements, modernizing the fare collection system, continuing replacement of track components, elevator and escalator replacements, water remediation and ventilation, as well as the office consolidation efforts. I'll switch gears to the operating budget. Both Metrorail and Metrobus have experienced significant decreases in ridership during the last 5 years as the system went through a period of well-known challenges, followed by a commitment to rebuild the system and restore it to a state of good repair. This work is still underway today, and we are a long way from ridership and revenue levels we had 5 years ago. Compared to FY14, trips on Metrorail have decreased by 29 million, and revenue has decreased by $60 million. Trips on Metrobus have decreased by 28 million, and revenue has decreased by 17 million. During FY19, Metrorail ridership decreased from station closures for capital improvements and federal government shutdown, which negatively impacted Metrorail revenue. Despite these challenges, we observed some positive signs for rail ridership during the second half of the year. Metrobus experienced a sharp decrease in paid ridership as fare evasion continued to take a toll. On Metrorail, ridership in the near term will continue to be impacted by the platform improvement project, which has planned closures in 2020 and 2021. We believe with the recent investments made and the gains in reliability that occurred during FY19, Metrorail ridership will begin seeing positive growth again once the disruptions from the platform improvement project are over. On Metrobus, we expect to see continued flat ridership, eroding revenues needed to support service. Metro is required by law in Maryland and Virginia to not exceed 3% annual subsidy growth. This means the amount that the jurisdictions pay to subsidize Metro's operating expenses after fares and all other revenues are accounted for cannot grow by more than 3% per year. With revenue essentially being flat, this means Metro must limit operating expense growth to 1% or less. Unfortunately, it's not as simple as budgeting 1% growth for each expense category, whether it's labor, fuel, supplies, since each category has its own unique dynamics. And moreover, nearly 70% of Metro's budget operating expenses are personnel expenses. A majority of Metro's employees are members of a collective bargaining unit. Metro has 5 such units. Metro's personnel costs, like that of its peers, has historically grown at a faster rate than 1%. Thus, personnel expenses, which are the largest driver of Metro's operating expenses, are to a large extent outside of Metro's control. These countervailing pressures create a growing gap each year that must be filled through planned actions to cut costs and grow revenue in order to produce a balanced budget as required by law. By FY2028, it is expected that the cumulative gap will grow to $2 billion despite the $186 million in cumulative savings Metro has achieved from FY18 through the FY20 budget development. Continued growth of expenses paired with flat revenue and a legal limit to subsidy increases means Metro will need to again find additional ways to cut expenses or increase revenues. During the past 3 years, Metro has taken the following management actions to fill its budget gap. Reduce costs for contracted services, increased non-passenger revenues, past product enhancements, controlling overtime expenses, increasing parking revenues, increasing in advertising revenues, right-sizing of the Metro Rail and Metro Bus service in FY20, and position reductions from the right-sizing of those services. FY21. Pertaining to the FY21 budget, the starting point for the process includes amending or jumping off of the FY20 approved budget. To that baseline, the 3% cap is added, resulting in the FY21 capped subsidy. Per legislation, certain expenses are excluded from the cap, including operating costs due to major capital projects that are approved by the board, such as the Silver Line, and complying with federal mandates such as the ADA expenses. The result of this process of beginning with the FY20 amended budget and increasing it by 3% and then adding any additional exclusions gets us to an FY21 budget. I'll talk a little bit about the timeline we're looking at here. We're in September now, and through September, there'll be a lot of data collection and analysis going on within the operating departments of the authority. In October and November, Metro will go through review and justification of the operating budget. In November-December timeframe, the general manager's budget will be proposed. In December through February, Metro will hold public hearings and outreach. By March, next spring, the board should approve the FY21 budget. And by July 1, the fiscal year will begin. At this point, I have a few questions for you, and thereafter, I invite you to also ask me questions. Customer surveys have consistently revealed that riders expect cost growth to be covered by the jurisdictions, not through fare increases. Now that annual subsidy growth from the jurisdictions is capped by law at 3%, where should the board seek additional funding? And if you would like.
Lorraine.
I would say advertising would be one big. Because I see a lot of advertising in some buses, those big advertisements, but there are a lot of them that have nothing. So it's like, we got a lot of buses, we could advertise a lot. Same thing with the rail cars. So
I think that advertising is a big item in there.
Okay. That's something we can definitely look into more than what we've done already.
Pat?
Yeah, I have a couple of things, well, at least one thing right now. Working with the Accessibility Advisory Committee, we have a program called Abilities Ride. And if you look at the numbers that that program has done over the last year in Montgomery and Prince George's County, you've been able to transfer a lot of rides off of Metro Access onto this Abilities Ride. Understanding now that Abilities Ride is being moved into D.C. and also Virginia, I think that we're going to see substantial savings from that, so that the paratransit rides that you're looking at won't be $50 an hour. Be substantial savings to WMATA as far as those cutbacks are concerned, and probably improve service too. So I know that's a program that is being implemented. I know that there are contracts that are about to be awarded concerning that program. I think that looking at the numbers and seeing what the savings are is going to be an important thing. And I'll put kudos towards ADA, Office of ADA Programs and Office of Access Services for the fact that they've been able to implement those programs and show cost savings. So I think that's a plus as far as the finances are concerned.
You're right about that. Thank you.
Who is next, Rob or Valerie? Rob.
Thank you. Actually, I'll pose a question real quickly. You mentioned that labor is about 70% of the cost. And understandably, that's probably driving a lot of the cost increases. I'm curious if that's the most rapidly growing cost or if there are other components that are rapidly growing over the foreseeable future.
At this time, that is the most rapidly growing cost. On average, I want to pull numbers out a little bit, but just based on the contracts we do have now, they're definitely growing way more than 1% per year, base salary-wise, when I'm talking about the union contracts. And so they're growing more than 1%, and 1% is described as some of the wiggle room we have. So if they're growing at 2 to 3% or more per year, and not just base salary, but you have to any pension expenses as well as other fringes, then you start to talk about big dollars.
Okay. And this is of the existing workforce, not additional hiring?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Valerie.
Okay.
And the presenter actually gave one of the examples of Rolls-Royce. And it's my understanding, according to this example, that Rolls-Royce makes airplane engines, and they have started a new product that instead of you buying the engine for your jet plane, you lease the Rolls-Royce engine, and they are in charge of maintenance. They have used artificial intelligence to identify how much use a particular engine has at a, under what conditions, that there are algorithms now where they can do the maintenance and save money and keep that engine operating longer. So I know it's not going to be that easy to, press a button and then have better maintenance systems, but certainly looking at things differently and using some of these tools like artificial intelligence, maybe there's some options that could
Absolutely.
They did also talk about chatbots, so if, you know, the customer service folks might be. But that's another area.
I'll definitely take that under advisement.
Will. Valerie, I thought you were going to say robots are running the trains. No, I thought about this, because it just hit me, and I don't know if Metro's even looked at this or not before, but knowing, of course, you know, with what I do with my time, volunteering to find different organizations in the city, has Metro looked at any type of scenario where they might be able to outsource any services to someone that might want to volunteer to help? Because, I mean, that could offset costs as well. And, you know, while there's a good number of people that are anti-Metro, there's a lot of people that are pro-Metro, and so they would, of course, like to be able to help the system whatever way they can, because a lot of people actually do really like Metro. So that's one thing that, you know, I think that might, you know, be a plus. So looking into volunteer services.
Thank you. Some of our union agreements may prohibit some of that, those types of arrangements, because that kind of gains into their territory a little bit if folks are going to do the same work for free. However, I will bring it up. Okay. Thank you. All right. My next question. Board policy is to pursue equitable cost sharing between riders and taxpayers by alternating fare increases with subsidy increases. Since there was no fare increase in 19 or in 20, do you think it should be considered by the board in 21?
Valerie?
Yes. It should be considered by the board in
21. Is there any particular area that you're...
I've been spending a lot of time looking at airline airfares, which have just gone through the roof. So I think probably WMATA can make a case on increased fuel costs. Oh, I don't. Good luck with that.
Rob.
Thank you.
Hi. I'll just say that I think a fare increase is maybe more dependent on the market, and, you know, given the options available today, you know, a fare increase, while it may seem equitable, might actually harm the longer-term viability by decreasing ridership. And so, you know, I'd hate to see a situation where simply, you know, pushing the cost back and forth maybe inadvertently damages ridership and the entire system.
So with that, what would you propose as an instrument to balance this budget that we have, given the laws?
I guess in my view, you know, fares are a function of what riders are willing to pay, and I think they will find alternatives when that fare reaches a certain threshold. And so, you know, I would leave that more to a supply and demand kind of analysis that shows the optimum fare, and then look at options for finding that subsidy, whether it's from taxpayers through maybe some fares and not others, you know, rather than an across-the-board fare increase, look for where maybe the system is more advantageous for riders here than in other systems. But I think maybe just a more nuanced analysis of what the riders will bear might be a good approach.
Okay, thank you.
Valerie, or Lorraine, I'm sorry.
On that vein, on Rob's argument, you also have to think, whereas I do understand and I do believe that at this point, after 2 years without raises in fares, it would call for a raise in fare. If we do that, it should be minimal, just because at some point it's not going to be cost effective for people to take transit. Okay? I know several people where they stopped taking transit because when they added the parking fee and the round trip fares, it wasn't that cost effective, because then in addition to that they were stuck in, you know, in metro sometimes or whatever, there were issues. So it's like, okay, either I get stuck in traffic, but I have a little bit more control over that as opposed to being stuck in a tunnel or something like that. So I know several people that are now driving because parking, at, you know, at the original factor was parking. Mm-hmm. It was too expensive. But now it's not being cost-effective taking transit. So you have to take that into consideration too, especially the people that live, because we're trying to attract the people that live, you know, in the suburbs. So those fares are going to go also exponentially.
Sure.
Go up. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Pat.
I think I'm going to be unpopular here, but I'll say it anyway. I think we've got some issues. You know, you look at, you've got the data that says you've lost 60 million here, 17 million there on bus, 60 million on rail over 5 years. And then this year you asked for the blue and yellow line to be out of service for 4 months. So I think in order to ask for a fare increase, WMATA needs to show that they deserve a fare increase. I understand costs and expenses, but I don't think that WMATA is in a position to ask for more money when the operation of the system could be more efficient. I think if you improve the efficiency, you look at things like on-time performance, you measure those, you say that that's getting better, that's good. I think that there are ways to look internally in the system to see where are there areas that we can make more budget cuts. I remember, I think it was it last year or the year before, we talked about restaurants and establishments like that, clubs in Washington, D.C., perhaps paying a little more of their fair share, and that was shot down, I think, by D.C. Is that, what is, you know, can that source of revenue be looked at again? I don't know. I know that one of the areas that could use an improvement within the paratransit system has to do with the trapeze software and the associated GPS system they have with it called the Ranger, which has been in place since, what, 1990, and it's not a very efficient system. How much is that costing, that system? So looking at things that can improve efficiency may help. What about automatic train control? I thought that was supposed to be turned on in the spring. How much would that, turning that system on, how much would that improve and lower the cost of running the trains? I think that looking at efficiencies like that, trying to bring WMATA up to speed, I think is good. I also see, particularly in Prince George's County, you look at the bus system, and it is being cut and cut and cut further and further and further. And that should be the basis of the system. We should be able to be increasing bus service, not cutting back on it. So I just find it hard to ask for more money when I don't see as efficient system as I would like to see. And I am a big WMATA fan. So the criticism is things that I'm interested in seeing and working on. I'm not just criticizing for criticism's sake here, because that's an easy thing to do. But I think that we need to improve efficiency and effectiveness and then ask for increases in the fares.
Thank you for your comment there. I would like to add, part of the presentation I showed here included was about $186 million worth of reductions and management actions over the past 3 years. So the authority has made strides in improving efficiencies across the board altogether, whether it be revenue increases by advertising, parking, whether it be more efficient contracting and reductions in personnel. So a lot of that has been done, but definitely some of the ideas that you bring up here are also useful, I think, and will be looked into.
Excuse me.
I'm in agreement with him, and in my opinion, until some of the changes are made to Metro, I think it's ludicrous to increase anything, and that's based on time. And I'm nitpicking now. The service, I live in Prince George's County. I have a bus that runs once an hour after 7 o'clock. So, which means that if I miss my bus, I'm either Ubering or Lyft or cabbing, because there's nothing where I live at to get me home. There's no consistency on the weekends. A lot of people have to walk to the metro station because we don't have anything where I reside at, where I choose to reside at. If the bus is supposed to come at 8, it'll come at 7:30, which means you've left. You have to get home the best way you can. I live in a wooded environment, and there's no metro presence anywhere. I'm not walking home. I love me, and I'm not going to make myself become in danger because no one's out there monitoring the station. Tonight when I get home, the station manager may be in the booth. They may not be in the booth. So I have to stay in the station until the bus or whatever I choose to catch takes me home. It's a lot of things that I see that I don't like. And until those improvements are made, that I'm in agreement with Pat, there should not be an increase at all. And then my next pet peeve is the customer service of some of the operators. And I've talked and I've emailed about this on several occasions, and there needs to be more customer service training. Some, they don't know how to talk to people, and I'm not sure what the issue is, but if I ask a question and you're having a bad day, that's not my problem. If I ask you a question about the bus, then I expect an answer, but to get smart with me doesn't help me. So these are things that I notice where I live in, and a lot of the people in my community say the same thing. So I think to ask for a fare increase is just out of the question at the present time. Maybe later, but right now I cannot foresee it. And I think if Metro decides to do this, you're going to have a boycott of the buses. I don't, you know, rail as well. That's it.
Thank you.
Okay. You raised an interesting question, at least to me, when you said the board tried to balance the question of taxpayers versus riders. And to my mind, that's a false dichotomy because we all pay taxes. We pay sales taxes and property taxes and so forth and so on. And Pat and Yvette have both raised really good points. I want to agree with them in some respects. They raise a point that, you know, to my mind, and I think objectively the statistics show that service quality, at least on rail, has improved substantially over the past, let's say, year. And the issue that people at my office come up to me and you know, complain to me, or just different friends who know that I am on this, I'm in this body, you know, they don't know that WMATA has gotten better. They don't notice when their train, you know, when the red line is on proper peak headways in the morning, or when they're, you know, in the midday getting a train consistently, and so forth and so on. So just improving the communications issue would make a potential fare increase, and I think just judging by the comments, the public comments that Paul, the Chairman Smedberg has made, I think that's, it seems kind of inevitable. But in terms of increasing revenue, on the writer side, you know, our gentleman raised an excellent point about making it easier to buy passes. Valerie raised the point that, that people should be able to buy passes at the machines and the stations. And not the unlimited passes, though. Right, yeah, but I'm referring to the monthly passes. And just looking back to the 2018, because Colin's not here to mention this, so I will, the 2018 Stabilizing and Growing Ridership Report, you know, doing things like increasing headways during the midday and into the evening, you know, all right, maybe not peak headways, but what if we're getting trains every 10 minutes? You know, these things would generate additional trips that would increase fare revenue and make any potential increase less severe or need to be less severe, I should perhaps say. Someone else mentioned restoring ATO, getting the system back up to a working standard. I understand that's why we're not getting ATO back, which was announced last year, I think, last fall. And so just kind of following through on some of the improvements that should be happening and were identified by Metro staff to be ways to increase ridership and potentially limit costs, you know, because it's obvious we're going to have a fare increase, to my mind at least, this year. So could we have something in return, please?
Thank you for your comments. I have one more question. And we've kind of touched on it a little bit, if you have a little more time. So the board approved the budget for FY20, avoided fare increases while keeping subsidy growth at 3% by law. That was made possible by the cumulative $186 million of cuts over the past 3 years. And nothing of that magnitude is available without impacting service for FY21. Where would you recommend the board focus? On which areas of service would you advise the board to look to if cost cuts are considered?
Valerie.
That. I guess one of the questions that I have, and it's an ongoing challenge for any organization that serves the public, is the lowest hanging fruit might be, I think the answer to the question is WMATA with the Rider Advisory and Board should have a framework for deciding and going through in a logical fashion how to choose what potential cutbacks could happen. In that framework, you might have things like low utilization. You might have things like more service at one time and a lot less service at another time. But I don't know what all of those elements are, but certainly I think it makes sense for us to come to an agreement about what kind of criteria we would use. So a great deal of help, but certainly I would certainly look at things that have low utilization, which might not really help Emma. She may have very low utilization. She may be the only person on her bus, and so there's costs in addition to the benefit of
Thank you.
Rob.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have an easy answer to that question. I'm sure nobody does, and I understand the challenge of trying to operate to a budget every year without the ability to invest in growing ridership. I think, you know, really in terms of where to cut, I think it's looking at where subsidization is maybe the greatest and where Metro is, I'm sure, losing some of the most money, and perhaps cutting back there on some of the subsidization of maybe less profitable routes or less profitable riders. I think it's just the sad fact of how the structure of this entity is that we can't make those kinds of investments and instead have to look at maybe where the subsidization is highest and sort of pull some of that back.
Okay, thank you.
Pat.
See if I'm on. I'm on now. Okay. I want to go back to some ideas because I think the theme that I've sort of talked about all night is increasing efficiencies as a way to, help generate income. I would suggest one of the things to do is advisory committee, accessibility advisory committee that I'm a member of. We put recommendations before the board. A few of them, I think, can help to cut costs with respect to the paratransit system. One of them is to have a flat fare. It's something we've been looking for. Rather than having some $6 fares, some $3 fares, some whatever, $3.50 fares or whatever, for the same trips, using a fare calculator that isn't very reliable right now, along with the trip planner, is very inefficient. A few years ago, and I have no idea why I remember this number, but there was a combination of 243,000 trips between bus and rail, and that's before we extended the trips out on the Silver Line, so I know there's more now. And having to calculate what the reasonable fare for paratransit is based on that is just crazy. Having a flat fare makes it easy across the board for everyone, helps to save money as far as paratransit. How much is that going to save? I don't know, but it's important to be able to run the numbers on efficiencies like that to see how much money we can save. Automatic train control, don't know, implementing that, how is that going to, how much money is that going to save? We have efficiencies that we can measure the cost of, and I know that the RAC has put these forward, and I know that the AAC has put these forward, and I think it's important to be able to look at the efficiencies and put a dollar amount to them and count them in as part of the way the system is being improved, not only to attract ridership, but also to make the system more efficient. I really feel sick about what I hear all the time about Prince George's County. Why is it that Montgomery County has good bus service? Prince George's County, year after year after year, is getting worse. That's inexcusable. That we shouldn't allow that to happen. Look at other things that you have going on. Microtransit, you've got, those systems are going to be helpful to help improve costs within some of the jurisdictions. I haven't run numbers on them, so I'm not sure. And then, we've also got the extension of the Silver Line out to, what is it, Dulles Airport? In 2022, something like that?
Ashburn.
Yeah. What is that going to cost? How does that fall into your calculations as we're moving forward? That's could explode costs in lots of different areas. So I think there's an awful lot to be looked at, but I would sure like to be able to put a dollar amount to some of the efficiencies that I see that we could that we've already put forward. It might be interesting to look at the recommendations that the RAC and the AAC have put before the board in their board reports over the last 12 to 18 months and put a dollar amount to those and see if those might be worth implementing, particularly if they can save money for the overall system. Because that way you're working with the people who are already riders, you're listening to the public, and then you're implementing suggestions that are saving you money. And that, to me, is a win-win-win situation, as opposed to, hey, we need money. We haven't raised fares for a couple of years. We need the money, and we need it quickly. The other's more work to go back over notes from, you know, the last 12 months and put dollar amounts to report items that RAC or AAC might have put forward. But it might give you something to consider and think about. And those are good recommendations. I've been here with the RAC. They're well thought out, and they might save money in the long run.
Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Catherine, do you have any questions? Catherine? Okay, any further? I might just add, you asked about saving money. I'm trying to find the FY20 budget. I suppose it's right there. You know, we're spending, what, $2 million, $3 million subsidizing Lyft and Uber, providing a subsidy that barely covers anything on a Lyft or an Uber fare. May I suggest running more buses after rail service ends, like we have suggested in the past, certainly, would just be one suggestion for going forward. Any questions about generally? Oh, Will, good Lord, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I didn't see your thing. Sorry.
I offered the chair the meeting this week, but he wanted to take it. Okay. this does go back to your presentation about the FY 2020. So one of the things you mentioned was that the anticipation for the revenue for rail to increase, but for buses to stay flat. Do you have a projection on why, on either case?
Well, the reason for bus staying flat is the trend we have seen over the past few years, but most recently over the past year. It continued to decline throughout FY19, and the decline did not stop on June 30th, spilled over into July 1. And so until those numbers begin to pick up significantly, I'm not projecting an increased ridership number.
Another question. You also talked about overtime. So is there a particular reason why there is an overload of overtime as opposed to being a steady amount? Because if it's, you know, an enormous amount, then, of course, that should be looked at.
Thank you. Management continually looks for different ways to be more efficient in the use of our workforce, which includes all the rail schedules, rail operator schedules, the bus operator schedules, our mechanics, the whole nine. Obviously, using overtime is more expensive than using straight time. And so this is like an ongoing effort to continually reduce overtime. I would add that there are certain union rules in our collective bargaining agreements that do not help to decrease overtime. One I can recall off the top of my head is how overtime is dealt to employees, and it's dealt by seniority, and the most senior people are the more expensive people. And so if they're dealt first, just thinking of their hourly rates, then the guy with the most seniority, who is the most expensive guy, gets to pick overtime first. But those are the current collective bargaining agreements. So there's
there are some things management can do to ensure that we maximize scheduling for the bus and rail operators and, you know, everyone else. But there's some other things that are outside of management control. When I talked about the FY20 budget and even the 21 budget, the personnel costs are over 70% of our costs, our operating costs altogether. And to the extent that management can be more efficient about the things that we can control, then we do that. But to the extent that we're governed by the collective bargaining agreements, then we follow those agreements.
So you suspect or are aware that the overtime is more from the bus and rail operations as opposed to being inside of office type of operations? Is that?
The overtime is definitely in the bus and rail operations.
Okay. I mean, I could see, you know, scenarios where we have like a major sporting event and that, you know, it's kind of like, okay, well, we need to have additional people in place because they want the system to stay up and running. But otherwise, I'm trying to think of other scenarios where, you know, a lot of overtime would be needed. So, but, okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Pat, did you have anything you wanted to add or any questions?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know if you were saying Kathy.
Oh, no, sorry.
No, I really don't. I would like to just say thank you. This has been a very good session, and it's good that we are able to spend the time with you and get a briefing in September with things that are coming up. So I think everybody here wants to find ways to make this work. And I can also say to you that on the AAC side, it's very much the same. Very spirited discussions with lots of passion and all that kind of stuff. And people care about what we're doing and the system and want to see it succeed. So I guess when you get criticisms, we're all trying to hit the problem from different angles, but we want the same result. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Does anyone else have anything? Because I have one.
If I'm audible, can I make a comment from
the hearing? Yes, please, Catherine. I'm sorry.
Quite right. In general, I agree with just about everything that Pat said. It helps that he is the one, he and Andrew are the two that I can hear most clearly. So I apologize if I'm repeating anything that anybody else said. But I definitely agree with Pat that I think there are still plenty of efficiencies that could be found in WMATA's budget before making the statement that it, as Andrew pointed out, we riders are also taxpayers, so saying that it comes down to either getting more money out of the taxpayers or the riders is a bit of a false choice. But given that we're looking at, for example, a $400 million infill station, with a $50 million that is not apparently even going to cover one entrance to it, and given that it took multiple years to get the chiller situation fixed in a couple of stations, I have some doubts that every efficiency has been applied so far in the management of what WMATA is actually handling. So I agree that there are still some efficiencies to be done. And I certainly hope that WMATA is going to be looking at the cost of some of these very big ticket items that directly affect the riders and making sure that they're being as efficient as possible with those before they ask for a fare increase again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. I would just, if I could just echo what Catherine said, I forget the exact funding formula for this, but the Potomac Yard station costing something like 10 times more what it, you know, would cost in comparable countries to build an infill station above ground. And I have actually a question about potential improvements over the coming fiscal year. For example, the restoration of automatic train operation, or like I mentioned, decreasing midday headways. Is there any chance we might see those things over the coming, over in FY21?
I'll definitely go back to operations about some of the suggestions and recommendations you've made here. I've heard ATC a lot. I've heard headways. And those are areas that we have explored previously. And the discussion is still open on those areas.
Okay. Anyone else? Well, yeah. Thank you very much. We appreciate your taking the time this evening. And we are, as Pat said, you know, we are WMATA's best friends. We all want this to work, and we want to create a transit agency and a transit system that is equitable and shares its benefits throughout the region. So thank you very much for coming to speak with us this evening.
Thank you for having me. All right. Thank you.
Okay. I can. John, in regards to the email that you forwarded to Colin, Will, and I could just. Do you want me to, I can just call in after this. Oh wait. Oh. I see. Yeah. Yeah. No. Okay. Okay. That's. Yeah, sorry. Okay.
Okay, so the next item on the agenda is the platform improvement project and the reopening. Is that where we're going to go next?
Yeah, you had a, you, I don't remember if it was you or, I forget who it was that emailed us.
So Denise, my colleague, emailed you all, I believe, last week. We will be welcoming riders back to the 6 reopened stations on Monday morning. As of yesterday, anyway, members of the RAC, Andrew had brought this up, if there were a way for members of the RAC to participate. As of yesterday, 4 people have indicated an interest, Will, Lorraine, Valerie, and Colin. If there is anybody else, either here now, please just let me know. We don't need to do this in the middle of the meeting, but for the 4 of you, or if there's anyone else, I was advised that it would be great if we could sort of spread the love across multiple stations so we can chat after the meeting about where you'd like to be. And you just need to show up in the morning. Somebody will give you a button and a bag of swag to hand out, and that's it. It's pretty low key. So unless anybody has any questions. Right. Oh, no. No, we are going to have, we're going to have contractors out there. The people, I don't know if it's going to be exactly the same people that have been in the yellow vests, those of you that have traveled through the project area. I think they're going to just be, either them or someone very like them is going to be there from opening until about 10. You are not required to show up at 5 a.m., you know, 7, 8, and you know, stay. And if you think about it, it also makes sense because our ridership at 5 a.m., while not nothing, is not, you know, not great. So, you know, 7 till whenever you have to go, and but we can discuss that afterwards.
Thank you, John, and please thank Denise. I'm sorry, I actually have to participate in an interview that morning for a job candidate, so I can't make it. But thank you for organizing this. I think everyone, you know, it's good that we're being involved and that kind of thing. Next
so
thing.
So exactly what is it that we're expected to do?
Sorry, I just want to make sure this is on. You'll show up, you will check in with one of the contractors, they'll give you like a welcome back button, and you'll just be handing out, I'm not sure what exactly it is, but little welcome back gifts and just saying, we're glad you're back. And if you, you know, if you want to engage in a longer conversation with riders, if anything happens to come up, you know, you're certainly free to do that, but mostly it's just being a smiling, welcoming face for those of us who have suffered for the past 3.5 months. Sorry, these are the stations on the yellow line and yellow and blue line south of National Airport. So Franconia Springfield, Van Dorn, Huntington, Eisenhower, King Street, Braddock Road.
So, okay, well, thank you very much, John. Any announcements? I thought I would just, I brought a copy. I'd mentioned this gentleman back in May, I believe. This is Daryl Crawford. He's the station manager at my home station. Carrie Murakami, who interviewed Pat a couple weeks ago for the Washington Post and the Express on the DC Rider column, wrote a very nice piece about Mr. Crawford. He brightens a lot of people's days every day. And, you know, I wish every station manager could be as bright and cheery and wonderful as him. I'm sorry. I was just highlighting this, just mentioning the piece in last Friday's Express. Daryl Crawford, Virginia Square, the pride of the Orange Line. The DC Rider section. So it's online too. It's a nice piece. It's very personal. Valerie.
I believe Catherine had shared with me, or maybe it was Lorraine, a link saying that the circulator is accepting babies and strollers. And I was wondering if we might be able to talk with someone at the circulator to come to a meeting and talk about their experience and if there's been any downside or upside to it.
Yeah, I don't know, John, if there's anyone from, I guess, I'd be DDOT that we could invite, but...
I can ask the question if that's the will of the body.
Any objections?
Well, their experience using a lot of babies to stay in the strollers on the circulator.
So what group of that particular bus on?
I don't think it's that it's approved. I think each bus has their policy, own rider policy. Can you help me out with
that? Well, right. I mean, the circulator as its own entity is able to have different policies than WMATA has. And so the circulator's, as I understand it, the circulator's policy is that it's not required that you fold up your stroller before you come on the bus. Space available. And I want to say there was something else. I don't know. It wasn't bikes. I thought it was something else. But it sounds like what Valerie is suggesting is, you know, Metro's policy is different and getting some feedback from the circulator operators on what their experience has been. So I'm happy to look into if someone can, you know, if someone from DDOT is able to talk to us about that. I can reach out to somebody at DDOT. We can.
Thank you. I appreciate you checking on that. I will also mention I do occasionally take the bus, and I've been paying more attention to babies and strollers recently because it's been a discussion point here. And I just had to giggle to myself when someone came on with a baby stroller full of groceries and did not have to pull it up. So I just think that it's worth continuing the discussion if we could.
Not just all of that,
also say that I have seen a driver hold up a bus because someone with a wheelchair needed to get on, and they kept saying, and people wouldn't move. And he said, hey, bus stays until this person gets on. And you know what? People were able to move after that. So.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, it's always, and it's been over the years, always just enforcement. And yeah, it's something that, and I agree. I mean, I know and I can't for the life of me remember where AAC came down on strollers. I think we contradicted what the RAC said. So I think it's important for us to have a joint understanding of where we are on some of these issues, particularly if we go before the board and we say A and you say B. That doesn't help matters too much. But I will say that the chair of the AAC, Bill Posner, is talking and sharing our positions with the RAC, and I think that exchange of ideas back and forth like that is good and important, because as both advisory committees, we need to be credible. I don't think we always need to agree, but we need to be able to respect each other's views, and I think we're doing well in that arena.
What I think regarding the wheelchairs and the strollers is that, as far as I understand, the wheelchairs have the priority, okay? Like you were saying that it was an issue of real estate, you know, in the priority seating area. But it seems to me that obviously if there's a wheelchair, the wheelchair would take priority over a stroller. The stroller can be folded. A wheelchair cannot. So, but it's an issue that if there's no wheelchair, why can't a stroller use that space? That's my problem there. You know, why not use that space there? If there is no wheelchair, if there's nobody, you know, that has accessibility issues, why can't they use them for freaking shopping carts, for crying out loud? Why not the stroller? So that's the whole thing. But the priority would always fall within the wheelchairs. That's the way I've always seen it.
Did you have something else you wanted to mention, Valerie?
Yeah, this is another issue. This is totally different, not wheelchair
or stroller
related. Recently, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, there was an event in Arlington County at the Columbia Pike that it was a Share Our Streets event. And they had all these forms of transportation. They had art was represented. They had all the scooters and the bikes and the, you know, WMATA was not there. Seems to me that that's the kind of event that WMATA should be there. I don't know if it was an issue that it was a county event and that they were not invited or what, but seems to me that WMATA should be in all those kind of events, because don't get me wrong, I ride Metro Bus and Art Bus, but the ones that they were promoting, obviously, was art. And of course, the bus that I had to take to get to that event wasn't Metro Bus, okay? But it was just a slight that was very noticeable to me being a member of this body. So I think that there should be a better coordination between the jurisdictions and WMATA regarding promotion in this kind of events, because there is, you know, this festival, that festival, and, you know, in all these different jurisdictions, WMATA should be represented in all those.
I almost went to that as well. I'm sorry I didn't get to go. But yeah, Pat, I'm sorry.
I guess first, I'm not having the agenda in front of me. Are we an open forum?
Yeah,
oh, we are. Okay.
New business announcements. Yeah.
Okay, so I also wanted to bring up another area that I think is important. At least it's gotten a lot of press lately with the AAC. And I think whatever we decide to do, we need to coordinate with the RAC, and that has to do with these dockless e-scooters that are out. We have seen, and I have not seen it, but I did hear that they're able to be ridden on platform on the station platforms. Interesting. But also, people just abandon these scooters around the entrances. I tripped over one just on the sidewalk right by a right by an intersection ramp. Just didn't expect it. My cane missed it. But we've had folks that have really had a lot of close calls, that visually impaired folks and other folks and just folks with mobility canes and stuff like that, that these scooters are just a hazard. And they're just dropped and abandoned and all that kind of stuff. So AAC next Monday is going to start to look at this. And one of the things that I think, and I will, you know, it gets passed up through the subcommittee to the full committee, which means our chair can share that exact with the chair of the RAC. I think we need to be able to look at this and talk to the board with kind of a coordinated set of recommendations going forward to make sure that the riding public is safe in the stations and not going to be tripping over these scooters, particularly as it gets darker in the evening and stuff like that. So it's been a real problem here, and it's jurisdictional thing. But I'm just seeing a lot in the disability community and wondered if anybody else had thoughts on all these e-scooters and e-bikes that we see lying around.
Lorraine?
Just wanted to let you know that I had a conversation with the Arlington County representative dealing with this issue of the scooters, and my objection being when they abandon them on the sidewalks, and that seems to be, at least in Arlington, it seems to be everywhere. So I kept saying, look, even if I were wheeling somebody on a wheelchair, I would have to put the brakes on the person to go and get to the sidewalk and, you know, get move to wherever and move the thing out of the way. A person on a wheelchair cannot move that scooter, depending on how and where it's blocking, would not be, a lot of them would not be able to move them. And what would that person have to do? Go to the street, go back, and then go on this? So what we were discussing also is it, my whole point was that they should not be riding on the sidewalk, because they also, it's an issue, you know, the speeding, the same thing that you don't allow bikes on the sidewalk, you should not allow the scooters. And they know that the county has been thinking that they have been suggested, it has been suggested that scooters and bikes share the same lanes. But it has not, that is still a proposal. They are still reviewing and that kind of situation. But yes, I did bring up the whole issue with accessibility, and my point was especially on the wheelchair, because I used to wheel my mother on a wheelchair. And I know for a fact that if that had happened, I would have had to stop her, break her, you know, go get out of the freaking way, and, you know, and then. So a person that is by him, you know, by himself would not be able, or the motorized wheelchair, they would not be able to do that. So,
Valerie,
just a couple comments. Today, when I was coming into the meeting, I saw someone taking one of those scooters, not a personal scooter, you know, Lyft scooter, Lime scooter, whoever's scooter, into the metro, taking it to another stop, which I thought was a little odd. But I have actually seen someone ride a scooter on the platform of Georgia, on the
Avenue.
And I have just seen, have you too?
No, I Avenue, Georgia Avenue.
No, no, on the platform.
Right,
the
you said the, yeah, never mind, sorry.
And I have also seen them just abandoned on the platform of Metro. And so I guess a question I would have is, Metro has all kinds of policies. You're not supposed to eat. You're not supposed to drink. How about you're not supposed to bring your for-profit scooter into the Metro? Is that because I think that's one way of dealing with, you know, some of this scooter pollution.
And segues are allowed. We're allowed. Yeah. And they allowed them. But you needed to have, because that was another very similar to this thing where you had these things that could zip around at 10 or 15 miles an hour, totally quiet. You couldn't even see them coming. I don't think the problem materialized as you're having with dockless scooters and stuff like that now. But they did, you're right, they did allow them. But I believe you needed to have a pass or something. It wasn't so much registration, but you did have to get permission to take them into the subway system. This was, my goodness, this was 10, 15 years ago or something like that. Yeah.
I just had a brilliant solution. No, let's not ban these things. Let's just charge them two fares.
I can see that extending to the wheelchair people. That would be fun.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I think that. Yes. I think that's actually how that developed.
Okay. I thought I might just go down my notes for our report this month. Since Colin will be, I believe, somewhere nice during the meeting, so I'll be doing that. So making it easier to purchase unlimited passes, one thing that did occur to me is maybe emailing existing registered SmartTrip users who are not using a pass about what, you know, the potential savings would be to them if they would use a pass. A couple folks brought up improving further improvements to reliability, for example, the return of automatic train operation, improve communication, and try to communicate the ways in which service is better or the ways in which service they're working to make it better. I wasn't sure where we came down on the fare increase question. I think generally, you know, if we get something in return.
That's what I said. You know, logic says, yeah, we haven't done it in 3 years, so, you know, but there's a you have to take into consideration all the people that are going to leave the system because it's not cost effective enough.
Okay, so we have concerns that a fare increase would result in decreased overall ridership. Okay. Okay. A couple of other points that come up that we didn't really get to. GPS tracking for the next round of platform project shuttles, which was not something we had this year. Just making sure that's still on the agenda for the next 2 years of that in Prince George's and Fairfax. Let's see. More training for the replacement shuttle operators for those platform projects. More active enforcement by station managers to prevent scooters on platforms and inside stations and also outside at station entrances. I know I just mentioned, Lorraine, you've probably seen them too, or anyone who's been to Arlington. A lot of the stations do have now designated scooter parking zones I know Ballston and Virginia Square, and I think Clarendon do now. So just throwing that out there. We'll mention the things, the baby things, the things you carry babies in. Thank you. Yeah, Pat.
Just throw it out there, and you guys can tell me if you think it's worthwhile. But we've just gone through the blue and yellow line, you know, all that work that was done. It seemed, you know, kind of rough in the beginning, but I didn't hear a whole lot of complaints considering the amount of time that things were out and how complicated it was. Is the sense of the RAC that this project was well was effective and well done?
I think that it was a major improvement over when the red line shut down.
I think it was more complicated.
I think that still there is room for improvement for whenever.
But does the RAC want to say well done?
I would say well. You see, at the beginning, there were so many, but they did improve it, so they learned their lessons.
They were very responsive when they were talking about the bus, adding more buses, because the Landmark Theater, I think, was not something originally planned, but they brought it in. So I think that they demonstrated agility and customer service.
That was why I mentioned the training in advance of the shutdown for like the express shuttle or the Pentagon to whatever it is, Pentagon to Huntington / the other one, Franconia, which had been something that had come up. The express shuttle buses from Pentagon to Huntington and so forth. So generally well done. I think the sense I got from our last meeting was that July, I guess, when Michael Weinberger and Jim Hamry were here, I think the Y-11 bus that I mentioned was kind of an issue. So generally well done. Okay. And if people would be so kind as to email me how it goes next week at the reopening. I'm actually kind of sad I'm not going to be able to be there, even though I'm not remotely a morning person. Some poor job candidate will get my non-morning person-ness. No rush. I've got, I'll be... write all this up and so forth. So, anything else before we adjourn?
As I mentioned to you, that's actually the same morning that the bus transformation project reconvened. So I'll be, at the yellow blue line opening, but I'll be jetting back down here for that at 10 a.m. So at that point, I'll be able to have a update for us. And, it sounds strange for me to talk through this. I just rode on the bike 26 miles before I came here, and I did not realize my voice was this hoarse. And I drank water, too. I'll get an update to that that day so that we'll know, where things lie with the project. So.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much for being nice to me. My first time chairing one of these. Without anything else, we're kind of a motion to adjourn.
Second.
I need a first, though.
First.
Okay. Okay. No, sorry. All right, we're adjourned.
Thanks.
Thank you all.